drug. Right. And Nicole, that's wonderful. Tim, Joan, and Nicole, fantastic. Okay, so let's.
Here's Rabbi Lou.
Good evening.
Good evening, Rabbi Lou.
Good evening. Hi.
Lovely.
Good evening.
Thank
I'm
you.
sorry, I still can't get my screen right. I
Okay.
still can't get my screen right. I'm coming back to see if you can put it right.
Hold on.
We can hear you, Kate, but we can't see.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I says my microphone is unmuted, but it's not. So sorry.
Here's the screen.
Oh, good.
It's very small. Thank you. Right, okay. So now we are. Now we have the idea of various things. Okay, so we're in Brachot, and it is 16a. So we still have the idea of various things preventing a person from saying the Shema. Now remember that nowadays we don't apply this at all, which was a statement from the Maharam of Rottenberg. A great scholar of the Middle Ages, Reb Meir of Rottenberg. He's famous because he was arrested and put in prison. And I mean, he's particularly famous for this. He was arrested and put in prison. And the king, or whoever it was who had put him in this captivity, wanted a large ransom for him from the Jewish community. And Reb Meir of Rottenberg told the community they must not pay the ransom. He would rather stay in prison and die there than inaugurate a spate of Torah scholars being arrested and ransoms being demanded for them. So he would not let the community pay any money for him, and he remained in prison and died there. And thank God it did not become a practice to arrest Torah sages and ask a ransom for them. So he made the statement that these ideas about the Chatan or various other classes of people not having to say the Shema, he said that generally people don't concentrate so much on the Shema anyway. And so everyone is duty bound to try to say the Shema at the right time, and whatever the other circumstances going on. There might be a situation that's an emergency of one kind or another, and one doesn't say the Shema. But in general terms, there shouldn't be any deliberate avoidance of the Shema. Nonetheless, the Talmud is written long before that. Before that decision by Reb Meir of Rottenberg. And so it is still talking about possible situations when a person might not have to say the Shema because there's an anxiety, they won't concentrate on it enough. So we have here what we learned in the Mishnah. This is the Talmud discussing what the Mishnah says. So in the Mishnah, it says, Chatan patur mikriyat Shema. A groom does not have to say the Shema. We discussed the reasons. He might be anxious. It's his first encounter with his bride. He thinks she's a virgin. Maybe she's not for some reason. He might be uncertain how he is going to perform, so to speak, in the marital bed. And so he's full of anxieties, and so therefore he does not have to say the Shema. I think psychologists today would say he's better off keeping to whatever fixed things like saying the Shema and praying and so on would probably help him deal with the new situation. Now, Tanu Rabbanan, the sages learn. B'shivtecha, when you dwell, when you sit in your home. So it says in the Shema, you should say these words when you sit in your home. Prat le'osek b'mitzvah. And so that excludes when you're carrying out a mitzvah. So therefore, this would be grounds for someone who is involved in another mitzvah to not have to say the Shema. And when you go on the way, when you go on the way means ordinary activities, prat lechatan, that excludes a chatan who's not doing an ordinary activity, is doing something very special. So there we see, so this means, so this is mikan amru, from here they said, Hakones et haptula patur. A person who marries a virgin is not liable to say the Shema. Ve'et almana, but he marries a woman who is a widow, who isn't a virgin. She's been married happily, could be, for many years, and then she got her husband unfortunately passed away. But he, when he's marrying this woman who has been married before, he has the duty to say the Shema. Now, if the reason for not having to say the Shema is because he's anxious whether or not she's a virgin, we can understand. In the case of a widow, obviously she's not a virgin. But if we're talking about him feeling uncertain about himself, it could be that marrying a woman who has been married, he doesn't feel so nervous. It's not something so frightening for him. My mashma, so what does this mean? Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa said, so he's explaining this passage that we had from the sages. Ki derech. Now, just the same way, when it says about derech, when you go on the way, now, when you go on the way, ma derech reshut. If we're talking about the way, that means a way which is ordinary permitted behavior. Av hachanami, so here too, ordinary permitted behavior, that is when, even though you're traveling, you should say the Shema. So now comes the Gemara. So one engaged, so therefore we have the idea that anyone doing a mitzvah is therefore does not have to say the Shema. So that's how it spells it out. Mi lo askin in the ka'ozel dvar mitzvah. Aren't we talking about when it says, when you go on the way, surely he's going on the way to do a mitzvah. Why should he go on the way just for a voluntary purpose? Let's say he's going on the way to do a mitzvah. And even so, Amar Rachmona, Hashem says that likre, he should say the Shema. So what's the situation? So Imke, Lema Krav Belechet. If the Torah just wanted to say that when you're going on the way, but this going on the way is to do a mitzvah, it would say belechet, when you're going. My belechtecha. What does it mean, you're going? You're going, Shema mina belechet didach, hu d'mechayva. You can understand, you can infer from there that when it's you're going for your own purpose, that is what you are, when you're liable to say the Shema, but hod a mitzvah. But if you're actually going on the way in order to do a mitzvah, which means in a sense it's Hashem's derech, it's not your path, it's Hashem's pathway, it's Hashem's journey, then you are not obligated And obviously with the rider of what Rabbi Meir Rothenberg said. Now this idea of yours and Hashem, we actually had that in the recent Shavuot festival, where there's a discussion among the sages about the way in which we enjoy a festival. And do we enjoy a festival as personal human beings enjoying food, relaxation, things like that? Or is a festival supposed to be dedicated time? We study Torah, we are sort of in a higher, elevated spiritual atmosphere. It is seen that with most festivals, it's partly for the person and partly for Hashem. In the case of Shavuot, there's an extra emphasis that the person himself or herself has to be enjoying the festival. Whether that is one of the roots of the cheesecake manifestation is a question I don't know. There are many reasons for the eating of milk food on Shavuot, of course, some kinds of milk food are particularly tasty, but there's certainly the idea that we should be enjoying the festival of Shavuot. Although at the same time, many people stay up late at night studying Torah on the first night of Shavuot. We do actually spend a lot of it in studying Torah as well. So then the question goes on. If you're saying that it's the question of fulfilling a mitzvah, now marriage is a mitzvah. So if it's a the issue is doing a mitzvah, and you're saying that if the man is fulfilling a mitzvah by getting married, he doesn't have to worry about the time of saying the Shema. So if so, if so, my iriyah hakonet as hakones et haptula. What difference does it make whether or not he marries a virgin? Afilu kones et almana nami. Even if he marries a widow, should also be the same rule. He is now fulfilling a mitzvah of getting married. There's the same mitzvah whether she's a virgin or a widow or a divorced woman, for that matter. Nonetheless, it said before that if he's marrying a virgin, then he doesn't have to say the Shema, and if he's marrying a widow, he does. So the Gemara answers, Hacha tarid v'hacha lo tarid. In the case of the virgin, he's anxious, and in the case of the widow, v'hacha lo tarid, he is not anxious. So I'm sure we could, elaborate on this whole idea of being anxious. And now we're going to move on from that in the discussion. If you're saying being anxious is a problem, what about if he's anxious about something else? However, let me just stop sharing for a minute and see if there are any points that anyone would like to make in this. Rabbi Lou, are there any comments you would like to make about this?
Not on the Gemara, but on the story of Rabbi Meir Rothenberg. Just an interesting aside is that the reason he was arrested was in order to be able to finance some war that they were having or whatever. It was just really he didn't do anything. They would just arrest somebody. And they say, you're a genocidal person, and you're this, you're that, and then give us a ransom. And he refused, and they would not release his body for several years. I think it was about 7 years. I don't know how many years it was that the few years that he was there living, and he forbade his community to raise any money. And eventually, there was a wealthy man who gave up, or maybe was not that wealthy. He gave everything he owned in order to redeem the corpse. And this man had a dream that he was offered a choice of reward for that, for giving up all his things. Either he would get all his wealth back, or he would experience Yom Kippur as it's experienced in Gan Eden, in heaven. And he chose the spiritual, the Gan Eden. And I heard that this the story that Rebbe told about Adam Zemiris, that the person came in the shul, that was that man, that was the Yom Kippur. And I heard that the Rebbe said to Reuven Dunin from Haifa, in discussing this story, he said that this story happened before the times of the Baal Shem Tov. Because according to the teaching of Chassidus, he should have chosen the money. And in order to use it to be able to do physical, the whole idea of Dira to be able to this way he had a great experience, a great high, but it's a general outlook on life. And this way, the focus is what does Hashem want? It's not about me. I do a mitzvah because Hashem wants me to do it, and that's why I share it with others. The whole outreach, the whole shlichus, the whole hafatzah, tefillin campaign, is because Hashem wants that person to put on tefillin as well, not just myself.
Interesting. Very interesting. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any other
I
comments?
apologize for really, it's a digression in a sense.
Listen, everything is part of it.
Okay, thank you.
The method of the Talmud is itself going from one topic to another. So, any other points that anyone would like to raise? No. Okay. So, let's go back in the text. Here we are, which now, so now we're talking about different kinds of anxiety. If the reason why the groom is exempt from the Shema is because he's worried, nami. So if this person, he has a ship which is out, doing business for him. And he's heard that there's a shipwreck, it's sinking in the sea. So that's quite so what about that? And if that's the case, if you agree that his worry is anxiety about his possessions, his merchant ship, if that would be a reason for not saying the Shema. Alama Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Amar Rav, why did this chain of people, Rabbi Abba saying the name, the son of Zavda saying the name of Rav, Avel Chayiv B'chol HaMitzvot HaMurot B'Torah, a mourner is Chayiv all the mitzvot which it says in the Torah, Chutz Min HaTfilin, except for Tfilin, the mitzvah of Tfilin, on the first day, Shahari Nema Behem Pa'er, because it said it calls them splendor, as we have a verse in the prophets, Pa'echa Chavosh Elecha, put your splendor on you, which means wear tefillin. So there we have the idea, if the mourner who is in pain and preoccupied with the sad thing that the sadness of someone passing away. So, if he is liable to say the Shema, why is it that the person, why are we saying that the groom, because of his anxiety? Now, Amru Hatam. So, they said there are two factors here. There's Tirda Dereshut, Hatam Tirda Dereshut. There, in the case of the mourner, the anxiety is preoccupation of the fact that he's mourning. It's a very delicate thing, this, because to a certain extent, to a certain extent, there is a mitzvah to mourn, but there's no mitzvah to be, one doesn't have to be unhappy. Mourning has a certain structure to it, and one doesn't have to be so unhappy that one does not keep the mitzvot of the Torah. So, but here, in the case of the groom, the very fact that he is preoccupied is itself about the mitzvah. And so that's the way it answers this. And so therefore, whether the ship is, there's a problem with the ship, God forbid, or some other reason, or mourning, one does have to say the Shema, and after the very first day when the person is buried, one certainly puts on tefillin during the week of Shiva as well. Now, we come now to an unusual thing, which is in the next mission, and that is Rabban Gamliel, who behaved in an unusual way. We've just learned that there are certain things you do or you don't do, and Rabban Gamliel is seemingly doing or is doing something different. Masnissen, in the mission, this is a new mission. Rachatz Laila Rishon Shemeta Ishto. So his wife passed away, and when one's wife, God forbid, or any close relative passes away, one is not supposed to wash. And he did wash. Amrulo Talmidav, his student, said to him, Limadatanu Rabbeinu, you taught us, Sha'avel Asu Lichotz, that a mourner is forbidden to wash, which is exactly the way we have the law now. Amalehem, he said to them, Eini Kish'a B'nei Adam, I'm not like other people, Isnisani, I am particularly delicate. And because of this delicacy, for him, the not washing would be a very extreme discomfort. And so because of that, he understood it as something that he's permitted to do. Now, I think there might have been discussions in our modern age when we wash much more frequently than people used to do in the Middle Ages, for example. Most people have a shower every day. In the Middle Ages, might have been once a week, once a month. Erev Shabbat, people might have washed, sometimes less frequently. In the non-Jewish society, it could have been even less frequently. You know, could you claim that we are isthmus, that we are delicate on that score as regards the week coming up to Tisha B'Av, which won't be very long, far away, and God forbid in the time of mourning. As the law stands, we don't wash, just as it said in the Mishnah, even though Rabbi Gamliel did wash. Now then we have a few other things about Rabbi Gamliel. Ukushamek Tevi Avdo, when Tevi, which is the name of his slave, when he passed away, Kibbala Lav Tanchumin, he accepted the consolation as if it had been a member of his own family. Amrula Talmidov, his student, said to him, Limadatanu Rabbeinu, you, our Rebbe, you've taught us, She'ein Mekablin Tanchumin ala Avadim, that we do not accept condolences for a slave. A slave is not regarded as part of the family. Amalehem, he said to them, Ein Tavi Avdi Keshar Kol Avadim, my slave Tavi is not like other slaves. Kasher Haya, he was specially good. And so therefore, he would accept, he did accept condolences for him. So there's a whole, you know, subject, you could say, within Jewish thought. The whole concept of slaves, slaves in the Bible, different kinds of slave, Hebrew slave, non-Jewish slave, Canaanite slave, other slaves, people who sell themselves into slavery, people who are sold into slavery by the Bet Din, the limits how on slavery, how one is supposed to treat a slave, the way that if a master seriously mistreats his Canaanite slave, his non-Jewish slave, such as knocking out a tooth from the Canaanite slave, then the slave immediately goes free. So there's a certain kind of protection of the life of and well-being of the slave. And the famous phrase that anyone who gets a Hebrew slave, it's as if he's bought a master for himself, because if there's only one cushion, you have to give that to the slave, and similar things. So there is, it's a whole chapter about slavery, which, you know, is like a further concept. One aspect of slavery is that it helps us understand different dimensions of our relationship with the divine. So I should have really found something about that, because there's a sense in which our relationship with the divine is like a slave, and a sense in which our relation with the divine is like a child, a son or a daughter of Hashem. So that would be a good point to have here, and maybe a future edition of this. I could add that. So I'm going to say, add, re, slave or son, daughter, in relation to God. Right. So that would be a future, future text. Now, we come back. What about if the groom wants to say the Shema, and we already found that Rabbi Gamliel did say the Shema, that was in the Mishnah. So we learned that 2 weeks ago, or maybe even 4 weeks ago. So there in the Mishnah, it said that Rabbi Gamliel, even though he was a Chatan, he did say the Shema. So now we have the question. Now, a chatan, if he wants to say the Shema on the first night of his marriage, kore, he can read it. He can say the Shema. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, man, but Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says no. Lo kol harotzeh litol et Hashem yitol. Not everyone who wants to take this name, wants to take this attribute of being a very pious person, I'm not going to let even the fact that I've just got married, I'm not going to let that take away from my saying the Shema. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is saying, not everyone can do it. So he's the son of Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel, his father, he could do it. Whether anyone else could do it or not is a different question. So that is in the Mishnah, that's in this next Mishnah. And the Gemara asks, my time in the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, what is the reason that he says not everyone can do it? Kasava, he thinks, Aninut Laila the Rabbanan. So, one second. I think Shimon ben Gamliel should be taken. The Shimon ben is in brackets. Very often in the Talmud, when you have round brackets, mean you don't read that text. But you see, in the English translation by Adin Steinsaltz, he misses out the Shimon. So my timer, the Rabbi Gamliel, what's the reason the Rabbi Gamliel washed the night after his wife had unfortunately passed away? Kasava, because he thinks, Aninut Laila Drabana. The idea of mourning in the night is only Midrabana, is from the sages. Dichtiv, V'achrita K'yom Ma. This is a whole long verse about mourning, and the end of it, at the end of the verse, is the end will be like a bitter day. So the emphasis is on the day. So therefore, the morning in the day, that is considered morning. The morning in the night is not considered morning. It's only midrabanan, it's from the sages. Uvimakom isnis, and when someone is very fragile or delicate, that his skin is delicate, then logas ube rabbanan, the sages didn't say that he has to wash at that time. So there we have this concept of acute mourning. So it's explained why he washed the night after his wife, God forbid, passed away, because he regarded the mourning at night as being from the sages, and his condition, his delicate constitution, permitted him or anyone else to wash in that situation. Right now, we then come to the concept of the patriarchs and matriarchs. And Tanu Rabbana, the sages learn, Ein Korin Avot Ela Lishlosha. There are only three figures, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that we call the Avot, the patriarchs of the Jewish people. The Ein Korin Imahot, and we only call the matriarchs, Ela La'aba, the four women, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. Now, so this is an interesting thing, and it is implying that we have a special relationship with these seven figures, the three patriarchs and the four matriarchs. Would anyone like to read the text? Any volunteer?
What is it that you want read, Sally?
Can you see it on the screen? The passage in black text. One second, Roz. Here, each of the patriarchs. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay.
Would you like me to read that?
Yes, please.
Each of the patriarchs and of the different tribes manifests a certain spiritual quality. Any individual today may have certain qualities from this source, but not others. However, every Jew has within him or her the three qualities of the patriarchs, Avraham, kindness, Yitzchak, severity, Yaakov, mercy.
Right. So in other words, although each of the tribes, like Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, each of them has a spiritual quality, but each person may have one or more of those or may not. But when we're speaking about the patriarchs, the three patriarchs, kindness, severity, and mercy, kindness, love of God, severity, awe of God, and the quality of mercy. And Roz, if you'd just like to finish this with the next paragraph.
Sure. Further, when speaking to Jewish women and girls, the Rebbe would often stress that each one is a descendant of Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah.
Right. So there we have these patriarchs and matriarchs as they apply to each person, particularly the matriarchs replying to each girl and the patriarchs to each man. And so we have this concept. Now, Avot, my timer, why specifically the patriarchs and not the other tribes? Ilema, if you say, Mishum delo yadinan, imi Reuvenka asina, that we don't know whether we come from the tribe of Reuven, imi Shimon ka atinan, or maybe we come from the tribe of Shimon, right? Those are two different tribes. Ihochi, if you're saying that, imahot, in terms of the matriarchs, nami lo yadinan, we also don't know, imi Rachel ka'atinan, whether we come from Rachel, imi Leah ka'atinan, or do we come from Leah? There are four imahot, but you see, Sarah and Rebecca, okay, we all come from Sarah and then Rebecca. But when we come to Rachel and Leah, so there's Rachel and her maidservant, Leah and her maidservant, we don't know. If we don't know which tribe we're from, we don't know whether we're from Rachel and Leah. Ela, ad hachi chashivi, tefei lo chashivi. So we give it a different explanation. It's not a matter of not knowing. It's who is the most significant. So it's the patriarchs and the matriarchs. They are the most significant ones, whereas the other tribes and the other figures among the tribes, they are less significant, and so we don't say that that's something that pertains to every single Jew. So it's not just a matter of not No. Okay, so let's just stop and see if there's anything that people, oops, that anyone would like to comment.
I'd like to ask, please,
Yes,
what
Rif.
are the characters, special characters of the matriarchs?
That is a beautiful question. And I'm going to ask Rabbi Lou if he is able to answer.
What is the question?
What are the special characters of the matriarchs? If we've got the patriarchs, Avraham is Chesed and so on, and Yitzhak is Gvura, is severity, and Jacob is mercy, what are the qualities of Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah?
Excellent question. I would say that they were partners to their respective husbands. And it says that the sages say that Avram spread the word of monotheism to the men, and Sarah spread it to the women. And Yitzchak was discussing with his wife about the continuity, about giving the blessings. He found that they were working together. Yaakov, when Hashem told him, go back to Haran, it says he called his wives into the field. In other words, he consulted them because they were like working together. I never thought of it specifically, but that's how I would imagine it.
Thank you. Thank you.
It
That's that.
also says, to be more specific, this I heard from the Rebbe, but it's actually in the words of the sages. The Torah says that Hashem said to Avraham, anything that Sarah tells you, listen to her voice. Shema bekola. So Rashi, the commentator, says the voice means that Avraham was subordinate, he was secondary to Sarah. In Nevi'os, in prophecy. And the Rebbe said that what it means is that the patriarchs themselves were on a very high spiritual level, and they did not have the ability to attach it to the real, so-called real physical world, except through the matriarchs. In other words, they took the teaching of their respective husbands and brought it down. And the Talmud gives an analogy of the man goes out in the field and cuts the wheat, but you cannot eat the wheat. And it's his wife who prepares it as something that can become sustaining and feeding you. So in the spiritual way, it was Sarah saying to Avram, this is not good and this is good. Being able to, when they had these different discussions, Rivka was the one that recognized what Esav was more than Yitzchak did.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, right. We go back into the text. Not. Right. So now we have a further thing about the Shema and the Amidah, and we have a text from Psalms which is going to be commented on by one of the sages. So in Psalms number 63, it says, this hey is just verse 5. That's why there's a hey. Kein avarecha b'chayai, thus I will bless you in my life, b'shimcha esach apai, and to your name I will lift up my hands. And then it goes on the next verse, vav, verse vav. I couldn't get this vav to separate. Kamo chele v'deshen tispa nafshi, like fat and something, choice foods and fat, you make my soul sated. V'sifsei re'lanot pi, and my mouth will praise with expressions of song. Now, so that is two verses from Psalms, and now we're going to have a comment on them by Rabbi Elazar. Omar Rabbi Elazar, my dichter, what does this mean? He quotes the first verse. He says, what does it mean? Thus I will bless you with my life, and with your name I will lift up my hands. When it says that, I will bless you with my life, in my life. Zul Kriyat Shema. That's the saying of the Shema. B'shimcha esach apai, but I will lift up my hands to your name. That's the Amida, which follows the Shema. The im osekein, and if the person does that, alava katuv emer, that is what the verse says about this person in the next verse, kamo chele v'deshen tispa nafshi, like fat and choice food my soul will enjoy. V'lo od, and not only that, ele shenochel shnei olamim, he will inherit the two worlds, ha'olam hazeh v'olam haba, this world and also the future world. Shenema v'siftei renanot yahalel pi, my lips of song, my mouth will declare. And so these, this lips of joys, these different joys, the plural of joys, this renanot, the joy in the plural, that refers to the two joys. As it says, the plural joys refers to two joys, that of this world and that of the world to come. Now, so here we have Rabbi Elazar making an interpretation of a verse in Psalms and finding a way to see it, that on the one hand, it's talking about the Shema and then the Amidah, and then it's speaking about the reward that comes to a person through saying the Shema and the Amidah. Now, then there follows a comment on this. Is there anyone who would like to read this comment?
You want me to read it?
Okay.
Here we see.
Right, 1 second. I'm just coming back to it. It's in. Yeah, here we see.
Here we see Rabbi Elazar explaining two verses of Psalms in terms of saying the Shema and the Amidah. Can anyone invent such explanations? Can anyone do that? In traditional life, if one can find a source for one's explanation in the Talmud, Midrash, or Hasidic teachings, that is the sign of authenticity. Otherwise, if one simply made it up oneself, it might not be true to the real meaning of the verse. The Rebbe often cited the idea that all authentic interpretations of the same verse are linked by an inner Torah logic. Despite these reservations, many people in daily life, whether Hasidim or not, discover personal ways of understanding another level of meaning of a biblical verse or a quote from the Talmud. Many such interpretations feed into Jewish humor.
Can you think of an example of that?
Of Jewish humor?
Yeah, from a pasuk, from a verse or a Talmudic saying.
There was once a rabbi. There was a rabbi, and he was taken to court for something. Maybe he was speeding in the car, a traffic thing, or did something. And when he was there, the judge said, "Is it true that you are the greatest rabbinic authority in America?" He said, "And Canada as well." He added. So the judge said, "Does your religion promote humility at all as a quality to follow?" And he said, "Yes, but I'm under oath and I'm not allowed to lie." And he quoted a verse. He said, The Rebbe told us actually this story when he spoke about the people who compromise for political reasons and live in Israel for basic things like the Jewish identity or things like that. And he said, the judge said, in that joke or story, some say it actually happened, he's a name to the rabbi, that he said, I'm under oath and therefore I'm not allowed to lie, and therefore I have to tell the truth, even though I'm humble, but I gotta say the truth. I'm the greatest rabbi in Canada too. So the Rebbe said, every one of us is under oath, because at Mount Sinai, we were given the Torah, and therefore we have to maintain our integrity, even though it's not always comfortable, practically or politically or whatever.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's come back to the text. Now, here we have a very interesting thing, because at the end of the Amidah, see, there were 18 blessings in the Amidah, and then a 19th was added, so there are 19 blessings. Now, what happens at the end of those 19 blessings? Now, what the Talmud reveals here is that various rabbis would add a little personal prayer in which they are praying to God in a very individual way to God. Some of them it's very individual, some of them it's more for the community. And we will see that there are several versions of this that different rabbis would say. And then one of those versions became a standard text and is in most prayer books. So let's have a look at these different texts. Rabbi Elazar batad mesayim tzlotei amahachi. Rabbi Elazar, after he'd finished his prayer, he would say as follows: Yehi ratzon ufanecha Hashem elokeinu. May it be thy will, Hashem our God, you should make dwell in our bed, in our or our lot, they translate it like Purim. Ava v'achava, love and brotherliness. V'shalom v'reyut, peace and friendship. V'tabeg v'leinu v'talmidim, and broaden our borders with students. V'tatzliach sofenu acharit v'tikva, and make our end be successful with a positive hope and positive achievement. V'tasim chalkenu b'gan Eden, and put our portion in the Garden of Eden. V'taknenu b'chavetot, and help us that we should have a good friend. V'yetzetov, and a good desire. In your world. And we should get up early. And we should find the desire of our heart, to fear your, the longing of our heart should be to fear your name. And the plea of our soul should come before you to good, or the well-being of our soul. So there is a prayer all about, it's really a good, it's good things for the community and partly for the individual. So that is what this rabbi, Rabbi Elazar, what he would say at the end of the Amidah. Now, Rabbi Yochanan, here's another rabbi, Batab de Mesayim Tzlotei, after he ended his prayer, Amahachi, he would say like this: Yi ratzon ufanecha Hashem elokeinu, may it be your will, Hashem our God, shetatzit bevashtenu v'tabit b'ra'atenu. You should glimpse our shame and look at our problems, v'titrabesh b'rachamecha, and you should be clothed in your mercy. And you should garb yourself in your strength. And you should wrap yourself in your kindness. b'chaninotecha, and you should gird yourself with grace, with mercy, v'tavo lefanecha midat tuvcha, and the quality of your goodness should come before you, v'an v'tanutecha, and your humility. So, in other words, you dealing with us human beings, you should be humble and wrapped in these positive attributes. Many years ago, when I was studying in university, there was a book by a man, I think his name was Habermann, who wrote a book of Jewish poetry, which he culled from the Talmud and other rabbinic sources. And I just wonder if these texts, which are really quite beautiful poems, were in that book. He certainly had a number of things from the liturgy, which I remember. Rabbi Zeira, Bertad Masayin Slotei, Amar Hachi. Rabbi Zeira, when he finished his prayer, he would say like this: Yi ratzon mefanecha Hashem Elokeinu, may it be your will Hashem our God, shelo nechta, that we shouldn't sin, v'lo nevosh, and we shouldn't be ashamed, v'lo nikalein, and another, well, we shouldn't disgrace ourselves, me'avoteinu, before our fathers. Then Rabbi Chiya, Batadumatzli, after he prayed, Amahachi, he would say, Yihiratzon mefanecha Hashem Elokeinu, may it be your will, Hashem our God, shetehei torotcha emunatenu. Your Torah should be our trade. That should be our, what we work at. That should be our job. Va'al yidve libeinu, and don't let our heart be in sorrow. Va'al yeshkechu einenu, and don't let our eyes become dim. Then we have Rav. So he is an Amora, Rav. There's Rav and Shmuel. So Rav said, Rav batat slote amahachi. He would say the following after his prayer: Yehi ratzon mefanecho Hashem Elokeinu. May it be your will, Hashem our God, shetitnanu achayim arukim, long life. You should give us long life. Chaim shel shalom, life of peace. Chaim shel tova, life of goodness. Chaim shel bracha, life of blessing. Chaim shel panasa, life of sustenance. Chaim shel chilut tzamot, life where our bones are strong. Chaim sheyesh bam yirat chet, life in which there's fear of sin. Chaim sheein bam busha uchlima, a life in which there's no shame or disgrace. Chaim shel osher v'chavod, a life of wealth and glory. Chaim shetehei banu ahavat Torah, a life in which we should have love of Torah, v'yirat shemaim, and fear of heaven. Chaim shetemale lanu et kol nishalat libeinu l'tova, a life in which you fulfill for us all the requests of our heart for good. So that's, are there any comments on these passages that we have skimmed through? But each one is really very beautiful and could have a whole discussion about it. Any points or questions? Someone has put something in the chat. I'm just checking that. Okay. Right, Tim. Okay, I see that you said you have to go.
May I ask, please?
Yes, Rivka.
What's the difference between busha and chlima? Shame and disgrace.
Rabbi Luke, can you say what's the difference between busha and chlima?
I can suggest, I'm not, I would have to go check it out, but even if I know that, even if I say, which I will say, a difference between busha and klima, you still have a question of how exactly that manifests itself in life. Like, I think busha is usually used for humility, and not shame, like embarrassment, But same like, well, okay,
Well, there is a
we
positive
sang in
power.
our davening every morning, Shalonei Kolein, and the Rabbi Shneur Zalman says in Lukut Torah that it means. He said, imagine a person who's a charlatan, who's a thief, and then he's respected in the community, and then suddenly he becomes found out. And he says, in the world to come, you will be, we should never be shamed. I don't know the difference. That's the short answer. The people say a bush and a harper, people say in Yiddish.
Yeah, I mean, this is something
I,
that sometimes the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe would take two words like this and give some deep explanation of the difference between them. Rabbi Lewis mentioned, I mean, the word busha, as he mentioned, you see, there's a positive term to this shame and sense of humility. It says about the Jewish people, Heim Baishanim. They are shameful, meaning they're humble. But also, there's the pejorative term, the negative term. And then we have this term, chrima, as well. There is a certain commentator on the Tanakh, the Metsudat David, where very often the verse appears to repeat itself. Each verse in the Bible has got two halves, and in the middle is an etnachta, is a little sign which is like a comma in the middle. And not in the Chumash, but in the writings of the poetic prophets like Isaiah and Yeheskel, Ezekiel, very often the first part of the verse and the second part of the verse seem to be saying the same thing, but in different words. And the Metsudat David would say, Kafel hadvarim bemilim shonot. It's saying the same thing in different words. So according to that view, Rivka, so chlima is just another word for busha. But there's a famous Bible commentator called the Malbim who refused to accept that idea that it's just saying the same thing in different words. And he would very carefully explain why it uses one word here and another word there. So, if we could find a verse which uses the word busha and chlima and see what the Malbin says about it, you would get a beautiful definition. So that would be a way to proceed. It's
Thank you. Thank you.
okay. So let's now then. Then we come to a passage which Rabbi Yehuda Anasi would say, which is actually entered our prayers at another part of the prayers, not at the end of the Amidah, but part of the morning prayers. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Batad Zlotei, after his prayer, his Amidah, Amar Hachi, he would say as follows. Yehi ratzon b'fanecha Hashem elokeinu v'elokei avoteinu. May it be your will, Hashem, our God and God of our fathers. Shetatzileinu, that you should save us, me'azeh panim, from bold of face. That means bold, cruel people. Ume'azut panim, and from arrogance in general. Save us from arrogant people and from arrogance altogether. Me Adam Ra, from a bad man, Umi Pega Ra, from a bad meeting, Mi Yetzer Ra, from the evil desire, Mi Chaver Ra, from a bad friend, Mi Shachen Ra, from a bad neighbor, Umi Satan HaMashchit, and save us from the destroying Satan, the destroying attribute of God, Umi Din Kasher, and from harsh judgment, Umi Bal Din Kasher, and from a harsh litigant. Ben Shu Ben Brit, whether he is a member of the covenant, in other words, he's Jewish, Ben She'enu Ben Brit, or whether he's not from the covenant, he's not Jewish, save us from all these people. Now, this passage is in the daily prayers in the regular Siddur, But it's not at the conclusion of the Amidah. It's there as something that everyone says in the morning, if they say all these preparatory prayers. Now, even though Rabbi had officers standing guard over him, looking after him, protecting him, he still said this prayer, asking God to protect him. And then we have another prayer from Rav Safra, Batat Slotea Machachi. Rav Safra, after his prayer, would say, Yiratzon Mufanecha Hashem Elokeinu, be your will, O God, Shetasim Shalom, that you should give peace. Now we're going over the page to 17a. Befamalia Shomaila, in the upper entourage, the Famalia. The Famalia is like all the angels around God. Famalia Shomata, and the entourage below. That means everyone who is there below. Uveina Talmidim, and among the students, haoskim b'toratecha, who are studying your Torah. Bein oskin lishma, whether they are studying Torah for its own sake, or maybe they're not studying for its own sake. They're studying for secondary reasons, like that people should respect them, or they'll get a good shidduch if they're a good Torah scholar, or other reasons. And all those who study not for the Torah's sake, be your will that they should be transformed, and they should start studying Torah for a good a reason. Now here we have another one, another prayer. It's a beautiful little collection of poems, pleas and poems. Rabbi Alexandrai betot batat slotea mahachi. Rabbi Alexandrai would say the following: Yehi ratzon lefanecha Hashem Elokeinu, be your will Hashem our God. Shetamidenu lekaren or bekeren ora. You should make us stand in the rays of light. And don't let us stand in the beams of darkness. And let not our heart feel sad. And let not our eyes be dimmed. Some say that this prayer was actually said by Rav Hamnuna, and Rabbi Alexandrai, he said something else. After he prayed, he would say as follows: Ribon ha'olamim, master of the worlds, galui v'yadu lefanecha, it is clear and open before you, shiritzoneinu lasot ritzanecha, that we really want to serve you, we want to do your will. Umim akev, so what stops us doing your will? So'or shebe'isa, the leaven in the dough, and the leaven in the dough is a euphemism for the evil desire. V'shibud malchiyut, and political problems, the fact that the king, the political power does not allow us to dedicate ourselves to Judaism and Jewish observance as much as we would like. Yiratzon mufanecho, may it be your will before you, shetatzileinu miyadam, you should save us from both of them. That means from the evil desire and the government. V'nashuv lasot chokei ritzonecho, and we should come back to fulfilling the statutes of your will, belevav shalem, with a whole heart. Then we have Rava's prayer, and this is a very interesting prayer, which is not said at the end of the Amidah in the normal situation, but it is said at the end of the Amidah on Yom Kippur. Rava batat slote amahachi. Rava, after his prayer, would say as follows: Elokai, my God, ad shelona tzati eini kadayim, before I was formed, I was nothing. Va'achshev shelona tzati, now I have been formed. Ki'ilu lo natzati, it's as if I haven't been formed. Afa ani b'chayayim, I am dust in my life. Kal v'chomba b'mitati, how much more so am I dust when I die? Hare ani lefanecha, behold, I'm before you. Kichli male busha uchlima, I'm like a vessel full of shame and disgrace. Yehi ratzon lefanecha Hashem Elokai, may it be your will, Lord my God, shelo echza od, that I shouldn't sin again. And what I have sinned already, marek berachamecha rabim, wash it clean with your great mercy. Aval lo al yedei yisurim, but not through suffering, v'chaloim ra'im, or bad illnesses. V'hainu vidui de Rav Hamanuna Zuti b'yome de Kippurei, and that is the vidui of Rav Hamanuna, the small, on Yom Kippur, and we actually have that as part of the Yom Kippur liturgy. Now here we come to something closer. Ma brei de Ravina ki havu masan tzlotei ha'achim. Ma, he would say the following: Elokai, my God, betzol l'shoni mera, God, my tongue from speaking evil. V'sifsotai midaber mima, and my lips from speaking guile, falsehood. Ulemekalalai nafshi tidom, and those who curse me, let my soul be silent. V'nafshi ke'afal akol tiyeh, and let my soul be like dust to everything. Petach libi b'toratecha, open my heart to your Torah. U'v'mitzvotecha tidof nafshi, and let my soul run, pursue your mitzvah. V'tzatzileni mipegara, save me from a bad encounter. Miyetzahara, from a bad desire. Me'ishara'a, u'mikol ra'ot hamitragshot lavo be'olam, and everything bad that might happen in the world. V'chol ha'choshvim alai ra'a, and anyone who thinks bad about me. Me'heira hafer atzatam, speedily overturn their plans, v'kalkeu machshuvotam, and confuse their thoughts, yil ratzon imrefi, may the words of my lips be, the words of my mouth be for your will, be accepted by you, the hegyon libi, in the meditating of my heart, lefanecha, before you, Hashem, tzuri v'goali, my rock and my salvation. Now, something very, very similar to that is actually included in the prayer book. And that is what something very similar is said at the end of the Amidah. So is there anyone who would like to read the comment that it has over here? Anyone like to take that?
Happy to read it if I can see it, but I can't see it at the moment.
Right, I'll put it back. Here we are, Ros. Thank you. Right, may my soul be dust to all.
May my soul be as dust to all. Open my heart to your Torah. The Rebbe comments on this. When the person's approach to Torah is only with the effort of the mind and the intellect, without achieving, quote, my soul should be as dust, close quote, it is very hard to truly open one's heart to your Torah, meaning God's Torah. For the Torah is the wisdom of the divine, infinitely higher than the limited intellect of a human being. A person with only his intellectual power can grasp only a tiny aspect of it. But if the person feels bittul, self-abnegation, and feels that he is like the dust on which everyone treads, then this is a preparation to receive the Torah of the Holy One, blessed be He. Indeed, then he can grasp Hashem's Torah with intellect and understanding. Even more, he can ask God to open my heart to your Torah, meaning that his heart should be truly open with breadth and openness to receive God's boundless Torah.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Thank you very much. So there's another bit to that. Would anyone else like to read? Anyone? Yes, Nick. Okay, that's lovely. So let me...
I don't see it.
I'm going to share it again. There, another point on this passage.
Another point on this passage from the previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak Schneerson, on the words, open my heart to your Torah and let my soul pursue your mitzvot, one can ask, surely Torah is wisdom, which relates to the mind, not the heart. and mitzvot are carried out with the body, not the soul. So, what is the significance of the wording? The previous Rebbe answers, although we learn Torah with our head, our intellect, it is the desire in the heart which prompts us to do that. Hence, we need the input from our heart in order that we should learn Torah with our head. Similarly, with carrying out mitzvot, the dedication of the soul helps us perform the mitzvot with our bodies. Nefesh, soul, has also another meaning, will. When our will is focused on carrying out the mitzvot, we do so in a dedicated way.
Thank you very much. And then in these notes, which I've sent everyone, it just takes that concluding personal prayer from the Chabad prayer book, but it's very similar to any prayer book, which is very similar to the text that we've just read. So there we see the whole idea of original personal prayers and finding personal meaning in the prayer text in the prayer book. So would anyone like to read this comment over here? That's Rebbe Lu.
Okay.
Yeah, you're
There
ready.
is a comment.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on the screen. It's in brown. We see that several sages.
1 second. We see, I'm trying to enlarge it. 1 second. Okay. We see that several sages composed original prayers with which to conclude the Amidah. And a text based on that of Mar, son of Ravin, is incorporated into our prayer book. Additional prayers can be inserted by anyone into the blessing, Hear Our Voice, Shema Kolenu, see text of this below. But a constant aspect of prayer is finding oneself in the text printed in the prayer book. A personal, thoughtful approach to prayer helps one achieve this. They say that the sages who composed the prayer book, they put into it, they used words of a general way which will incorporate all the prayers of all the Jewish people of for all times. And when one uses that language, one is really connecting horizontally and vertically the Jews across the world and across the centuries with the same language. And at the same time, one can either think or at other moments have the personal prayer coming from one's heart.
Yes, so in the text of Shema Kolenu Hashem Elokeinu, hear our voice, Lord our God, merciful Father, have compassion, and so on. Ki ata shamea tfilat kol peh, for you hear the prayer of every mouth. And at this point, one can insert a personal prayer, might be a name of someone who needs a refuah shelema, something of that kind, some kind of extra blessing. I remember my doctoral supervisor, Shimon Abramsky. His father was a very famous scholar, Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky. So I was traveling to Jerusalem where his father lived, and he told me I should say, he asked me to visit his father, which I was very happy to do. And he had said on a previous occasion, he said that when his father would pray, he would add in long sections, hi Jonathan, long sections of prayer in Yiddish into his Amidah. And so I come along to his Jerusalem flat in the evening. Someone lets me in, and sure enough, he is there praying. And so I'm waiting for him to finish. He's saying the evening prayer all by himself at home. And it was probably quite late at night. And he certainly took a long time over his prayer. I could imagine, this idea that his son had told me that he would interpolate. quite possibly at this point Shema Kolenu, although it could be at other points as well. But that's the general point to add something in. But as Rabbi Lu said, the actual text of the prayer is pregnant with meaning, every word. And so therefore, finding the meaning in the prayer, and there are many sort of commentaries on the prayers to help one do this. There's a book published by a Lubavitch rabbi living in England, Yossi Alperovitz, who has written in 10 or 12 volumes, Or HaTfilah, The Radiance of Prayer, which goes through a large section of the prayer book and with beautiful explanations drawn from Hasidic teachings of everything he could find illustrating these different verses. Sometimes in discussing prayer with students, I compare it to the notes of a piano concerto or something, and you're the pianist, and how you play that piano is the way in which you pray, putting in the meaning in the prayers. So thank you very, very much for joining, and with the help of Hashem, I hope we will meet again in 2 weeks' time.
Oh my.
So I'll just stop recording and